Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 57 of Real Blend, a podcast that's currently bracing for that Green Book Best Picture win. My name is Sean O'Connell, the managing director here of Cinema Blend, and I'm thrilled to once again be piloting the ship for another jam-packed episode of Real Blend. Joining me, as always, Kevin McCarthy of Fox 5, Washington, D.C., who is running currently on fumes and Red Bull. My friend, how are you?
Literally. Yeah, literally. I'm doing great. No, honestly, this is like the highlight of my day, to be honest, today, specifically because I was looking forward to it. It kind of kept me going because I was like looking forward to doing the, especially because we started off as an award show, and this is one of the most exciting Oscar races I've seen in a long time, so I'm looking forward to breaking this down.
Until Green Book wins Best Picture.
It's not going to happen.
All right, we'll discuss that eventually. But first, we have to get to Jake Hamilton, the chief Jussie Smollett correspondent for Fox 32 in Chicago. Jake, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Doing well. How are you guys?
We're doing wonderful.
Let me rephrase. How the hell are you?
that was the part where I really felt like, for people who haven't seen this yet, our two of our great listeners, Carrie and Kalina, did a recreation of our show with wigs, posters that were edited beautifully. But how the hell are you was like the moment where I was like, oh, they nailed it. That was like,
did your imitations of you ever make you self-conscious about yourself? There was a moment am I an asshole?
No. So it's the same thing when someone tells you about a verbal crutch. It's like if someone tells you, like, oh, you say literally or essentially too much, then you start like questioning, like you start examining yourself a different way. I think it's a term of endearment that they were able to nail something about you that is something that would make me recognize your voice.
No, Kevin, I gotta say, I feel like they nailed you the best.
I don't know. Really? I thought Gabe was pretty perfect.
Gabe was pretty awesome. Well, Gabe was, yeah.
That's when I lost it, watching the... I was on a train in London going to my hotel, watching it, dying like a silent train. We're talking like I just cleared customs, landed at 7 a.m., was probably on the train by 8:30. Dead silent train Saturday morning and just dying laughing by myself watching this video with my AirPods in. It was amazing.
Yeah, really. And for people, just to give a bit of a context, I believe Kalina flew to Texas. Is that correct?
She's in Austin, and I think Carrie drove to Kalina.
So they met up and essentially sat in front of a camera like we do with our Skype podcast, just in case people haven't seen this visually, and introduced the show just like Sean does every week with his Justin Bieber looking wig that she had on. And then essentially went through each of one of our personalities. Like, they did all the puns for me. They did Sean's like intro jokes. They did like Jake's quitting and like all these. And then the Gabe moments were great because it was just him rapping. That's all it was. Like, it was just him. What's funny is we see Gabe on Skype shaking his head no every time we do something, which is 90% of the show wrong. That's literally him going like this. That's what they did. I don't know how they nailed that, but they did. It was very funny.
I'm fighting through a cold and it's going to be really hard because I keep laughing about this video.
Are you fighting with your family?
We have to put that video up on our Real Blend Twitter, and just dig through and find it. If anyone's trying to look for it, it's a
my wife loved recreation. It, but Lauren was obsessed with it.
It's so funny. Yeah. Well, and in addition to that wonderful fan tribute video from the two amazing women, we have reviews. And not only do, like, every once in a while, we toggle some sort of switch and it opens up these international reviews that we're getting from people that don't normally show up on the iTunes page. And then some people have been using the email account, which I'm thrilled about. We got a couple of great emails from people. So if you do not have an iTunes account and you still want to leave us a review because you've been listening to us, send it to RealBlend, R-E-E-L-B-L-E-N-D, at cinemablend.com. That goes to Gabe, it goes to myself, and we will read them at the top of the show. So I want to start with two that we got this week. One is from, this is great, I'm going to pronounce it phonetically because it's spelled really weird, Totally Not Kevin's Mum. from New Zealand.
It'd be funny if that actually is my mom this time. Like,
she's from New Zealand and says, "What an amazing podcast. Incredibly deep, down-to-earth discussions about film and the industry. Worth a watch. While all of the members are great, Kevin is the clear star. Such a nice young man that I've never heard of before this podcast." Is this someone that you know?
No, they're probably joking like they're my mom, and saying Kevin's like my favorite. Yeah, that's what that sounds like.
Totally not Kevin's mom. And actually, the subject is so proud, so I think it's...
Clearly they're joking.
It's great. And then...
That's a joke if you're first tuning in, that we make fun of the fact that my mom's the only listener of our show, if you're just listening to us for the first time.
The other one comes from The Real Marv from the UK, who I know follows us on Instagram, too. We'll also post
Sean, pause. Yes. When you hear the name Marv, what's the first thing that comes to my mind? Sin City. I don't know why.
Oh, yeah. I guess it
Mickey
would be.
Rourke.
Yeah. Sure.
Is that the first thing that hits your mind when you hear... That's the first thing that hit my mind. I just imagined Mickey Rourke in that black and white Sin City setting.
Well, wait, now I'm going to sound really stupid if I say this, but isn't that who gets shot in the face in the back of Pulp Fiction? Isn't it Marvin?
That's Marvin. Marvin? Yeah. Oh, there you go. So that was your experience.
I might think about that.
Marv. There you go. Yeah. So,
all right. He writes so much in one show, and he says, "I will admit to coming across the Real Blend podcast through their sister show, Hero Blend, and I'm so glad that I did. It's so entertaining to hear people who are so enthusiastic about film and aren't afraid to voice their serious and educated opinions to give the listener all the information that is needed to make a decision. The interviews are great, and I really like the blend game, where you choose your favorite film or performance by a chosen actor or director, an absolute must listen that I always have on when I'm doing my job as a driver. By the way, I'm not Kevin's mom," with an exclamation point.
That's exactly something Kevin's mom would say.
Yeah.
Right. Way to go.
I'm telling you, these Dunkirk and Kevin's mom, I'm happy those are making their way into the reviews. It makes me happy.
It's so great.
It's God, so this ridiculous.
These reviews help us so much. Gabe wants me to definitely point out the fact that because Apple Podcasts is starting to pay attention to the show, you have to go over there, give us a star rating. You got to give us reviews. Just keep recommending us to friends. Spread the word that way. We've seen the community grow. We've seen people come to the Twitter account and say, "Oh, my friend told me I need to start listening." But my friend also told me that this is just a great community to be part of. And then they start playing along with things on social media and weighing in, and of course doing the blend game things. And but it's not only that, like, in addition to the blend games, there are people who just, like, on the weekend will start up a topic amongst the blenders on social media and go for days talking about things. I love it. I think it's fantastic.
I agree with you.
You guys ever feel excluded? Like, I'll like randomly be tagged in the middle of one of their conversations, and it's like, my God, it's high school all over again. People are having conversations and hanging out without me.
I'll tell you what, I get a lot of Forrest Gump hate on Twitter.
Rightfully so.
Tweet me Forrest Gump stuff, and I'm like, what did I do to you guys to hurt you? Like,
well, you clearly hate a film that everybody knows is a good movie. That's the bit. Like we know you're doing a bit, Mr. O'Connell. We know you don't really hate it as much.
It's a long con. It's a very long con.
You also admitted that you're keeping it from your kids. Like, you're not going to show your kids that movie, is what you said.
I would not show that. Well, I told them I wouldn't show them Lord of the Rings. I might eventually show them Forrest Gump.
Man, Lord of the Rings is amazing.
We'll see. We're going to get into news, and we want to start someplace really special. Only because, special is the wrong word. Unique and different, because Jake happened to be at Ground Zero as this Jussie Smollett story was rapidly evolving. And from the minute that that story began, it seemed odd, and then it got even more strange, and then it took a million left turns. But Jake was able to cover it from the insider's perspective of a Chicago newsroom, and we wanted to give him the floor to sort of talk about that experience.
Yeah, just honestly, and you know, we talked about whether or not this was even an appropriate topic for the podcast, because, you know, what we talk about so often, which is one of the perks of what we do, is getting to travel the world and talk with sort of our cinematic heroes and sit down in these junket rooms, and it's fantastic. But, you know, Kevin and I work for, like, actual news organizations. We are first and foremost journalists, which is why I got on my soapbox a couple of weeks ago in regards to the Netflix numbers. But working for Fox, being the entertainment reporter for Fox in Chicago, which is the network that airs Empire in the city in which they shoot Empire, I literally live, this no pun intended, two blocks from where the alleged attack took place. I mean, this was as close to a story that could happen in my backyard as you could possibly get. And it was just the past 3 weeks really have been just a surreal experience within my career. about where it's just sort of been this blend of being both an entertainment reporter and just a journalist. I mean, I can now admit openly that I texted you guys on the very first day the news broke of the attack saying, guys, this doesn't seem right. Something is off about this story. And then obviously the truth ended up coming out over time. And it was just a really surreal experience and sort of a reminder that, you know, what we do is not all cushy, fun hotel rooms and traveling around the world and happy-go-lucky celebrities. Sometimes there is sort of a harsher, more journalistic side to what we do and is a reminder that at all times, you know, we really got to be on our toes whenever we're hearing things. You know, there's a great quote that I learned from Chicago journalism whenever I moved here, which is that when your mom tells you that she loves you, double check that. and it's just sort of a reminder that, you know, first and foremost, you know, we got to be a journalist, which is why I go back to the Netflix things, you know, like show me the facts behind those numbers. And it's, I love doing the junkets and I love covering the movies. It is the dream part of what is already a dream job. But this has been a really personally fulfilling and eye-opening experience for me as both an entertainment reporter and just a actual just journalist at the core.
Have you interviewed him before as part of the Empire stuff?
Oh, yeah, many times.
And how did he strike you?
Perfectly pleasant guy. You know, honestly, if I have a problem with anybody in the Empire cast, it's Terrence Howard, who is known to be not a nice guy. But Jussie Smollett has always been perfect. I mean, Kevin, you've interviewed him too. We've gotten him at the Empire Junkets before.
Yeah, I mean, like, it the whole story was crazy because, and again, I'm in D.C., but we also run Empire. Empire is a huge show for us. We had Taraji P. Henson come in the week after the incident. And I remember, like, Jake was talking about, like, the journalistic aspect to our jobs. I mean, you have to ask those questions. You have to be able to talk about that. I mean, she's coming in to promote What Men Want. And we talked to her about the Jussie Smollett thing. Now, at this point, you know, we didn't know what happened. So at the day I talked to her was the day he returned to set after the incident occurred, the day after he returned to set. So I asked her what it was like to have him back on set. How was he? Was he back? Because again, we didn't know anything was a...
He was a victim. We had no reason to believe that he was a victim at that point.
And but I remember my anchor then taking it a step further and saying, what about the backlash that, you know, this may or may not be fully true, essentially, and that criticism. And I remember the director, Adam Shankman, taking that aspect. And to this day, it's a very strange story. Jake has a much more connection to it than I do. But I mean, I've been covering it, but just based around the news that's come out of Chicago. And props to people in Chicago, by the way. Obviously, your station. I saw a video I think you posted about your camera guy grabbing a shot of Jussie leaving the courthouse yesterday.
Yeah, so that crazy is called shot. That is called a scrum when all of those people are like surround somebody as they're trying to move from point A to point B. Jussie was leaving after posting bond and was trying to get into a car, but he had to of course walk a stretch, maybe a quarter of a mile, and just this crowd of just reporters and photographers, not just from Chicago. This is a national story. Paparazzi was there. National entertainment shows were there. And so it's referred to as a scrum, which is a rugby term. And I've had reporters who have worked in Chicago as photographers for 30 years who have covered some of the biggest stories in the history of our country. It said that is the craziest scrum they've ever seen in their entire lives.
It was unreal.
Career report photographers saying that. I mean, it's just been a weird, weird time in Chicago these past 3 weeks.
Well, yeah.
And one thing we do have to emphasize, though, is that he is going to court. He does maintain his innocence. And in America, you are innocent until proven guilty. So that is something that, you know, obviously we have to, you know, if we're going to abide by our justice system, respect that
part
of the
story. He paid the guys with a check.
Personal check.
Well, here's the thing. So the reason why we're bringing this up is yesterday, Jake and I, or 2 days ago, it was yesterday, Jake and I were on a text chain. So it's Jake, Sean, Gabe, and myself. And I was in LA working on my Captain Marvel questions, and it was like 7:30 there, or whatever. I think it was 10:30 or 9:30 where you were, Jake. And then that press conference hits. And I just like was glued for whatever how long that press conference was. And people who, I mean, Jake, you know, the gentleman's name who is doing the main, the majority of the speaking, the superintendent.
Yeah, he's the police superintendent referred to as the top cop. His name is Eddie Johnson.
Yeah, and we were just like, Jake and I were going back and forth because it was, it's riveting.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's the right term for it, but it was.
No, it was. It was
good. Insane.
It was damn good TV.
Yeah.
But it was like, it was very, it almost seemed like a movie, which is kind of like, it was something you would see written into a film. Like, it did not seem like it was a real situation. How is this really happening?
Except, and then, I was in a very important staff meeting, and I had 65 messages on my cell phone. It just kept
blowing up. It was just Jake and me.
I've had to silence the notifications in this text thread just because, like, sometimes, you know, one of us has to step away from our phone. The four of us all have busy jobs, and we can't be up by our phones at all times. I've genuinely had to do that very same thing. I love you guys, but I've had to silence the notifications on our text thread.
Yeah, but Jake and I were going back and forth, like, and no one else was responding, but we were just kind of like,
I just assumed that they were captivated by our text. Yeah. That's why they weren't responding.
No.
But I mean, and then we can move on whenever, but my only question that I think Jake and I were, to Jake's point, nothing's been proven yet. He hasn't been to court yet, I guess is the
he hasn't been convicted.
Proper terminology. The question that I really want to know that I don't know if we're ever going to get the answer to, is why.
Yeah.
I mean, from what it sounds like, what police have said so far is that he was unhappy with his pay on Empire, and that he thought that the national attention that he got from this attack might be able to yield a higher paycheck for him. That seems to be unfortunate. Like it doesn't make sense.
A miscalculation.
But that's what we're being led to.
All right. Well,
but Jake, before we move on, real fast, what was it like in the newsroom for you? I think that's the question that we were all interested in. Like, what was it like to be in a Chicago newsroom reporting on that story? Was it?
The weirdest part of it, and this sort of goes back to the whole journalistic aspect of it, is that, you know, you get off the record facts and you get off the record pieces of information that you can't run with, and that's part of being a journalist. So there were a lot of things that we knew a couple of days, or in some cases a couple of weeks, before they really became public. So it was just a matter of, just double checking facts and doing good journalistic work. And we had an entire team of reporters at Fox 32 who did some truly, truly amazing work, and they held by their journalistic standards and they maintained their journalistic integrity. And I know that they had pieces of information that they could have run with, but they weren't. That maybe they were 99% sure it was true, but they weren't 100% sure, and they held back. And they could have gotten credit for going and being first. And there are a lot of moments where we could have gone and done that, and we didn't. And I walked away from this entire experience learning so much, not just from the experience, but from all the reporters at my station about really how to cover something like this and the importance of being right over being first.
Yeah, the lesson you just said is something that needs to be applied everywhere in journalism, no matter what the story is. And we've gotten to a point, and this is for everything. This is for movie reviews. This is for every single thing. Everyone wants to be first. Doesn't matter if it's like, if it's accurate, if it's, if you're not 100% certain about something, don't post it.
Right.
But because people,
especially something that could ruin someone's life.
Yeah. But you want to be, and we end up like, it's all about being hyperbolic, you know, and being the first to get to it. And like you said, even if you're 99.9% sure, don't go with it yet. I mean, like, what blows my mind about that story specifically, kind of tying it back to Hollywood specifically, were the reactions that people had on social media based on the news they had heard originally without knowing everything yet. And then having those people having to go back now and either delete their tweets, correct them.
But the thing is that all those people are now saying nothing. That was one of my stories today, is that all of Hollywood, who was so quick to jump onto social media and make comments whenever the alleged attack occurred, there's a weird hush over social media about this, which I think is very telling, which is one of the many reasons that so many people have problems with Hollywood. You know, is it that they'll jump on one bandwagon but not another? So I don't know.
Anyway,
moving on to bigger and better.
I want to switch gears to Chris Hemsworth being cast as Hulk Hogan.
Oh, Christ, I got problems with that too.
In a biopic.
I love this casting.
Well, first off, I think the casting is incredible because I think that Chris Hemsworth is far more talented than people give him credit for. Yes. And I think he'll be able to do a really good job with this. But leading into the show, Jake brought up an amazing point that I never once thought about. And it's a problem that's happening with multiple biopics. So, Jake, explain your hang up with this, because it has nothing to do with Hemsworth.
Can I guess? Can I guess Jake's hang up?
Sure.
You know what my hang up is. You know what my hang up is.
I know Jake so well. And I actually don't know this information. And I'm only going to guess this based on Jake's previous comments about biopics. Is Hulk involved?
Yeah.
Yes, he's the executive freaking producer of his own story. And you should not be able to tell your own story. That's my problem with Bohemian Rhapsody. It's unfortunately going to be an issue for me with Rocketman because Elton John's involved in that film and Hulk Hogan is an executive producer. And I'm sorry, Hulk Hogan has got a lot of stuff in his life and his background that he's probably not going to want told. And if that's the case, if he has any control whatsoever, if there was ever a moment where he was able to tell someone, no, I don't want that part told in the movie, then you shouldn't be involved. Wait till someone dies and then tell their story. I don't think someone should be involved whenever you're telling their life story. It's just not right. It's not right. You shouldn't be able to do it.
No, I agree. It's fair. You get the, but what my problem with Bohemian Rhapsody, you get the polished, no warts version. You know, you to me, you had the best question at the junket for Bohemian Rhapsody of just like, if this were an R-rated version, what's, you know, what are some of the aspects that we would have gotten from that story? And the minute they choose to go PG-13, they're going to soften it, obviously. And the minute that the band is behind it, they're going to show the best sides of their their rise to fame, of course.
Well, not just that, is that Brian May and Roger Taylor, in my opinion, they walk away from that movie looking like choir boys. When I read a book going into that, because we did two junkets for that film, so I read a whole biography about Queen. They were into just as much stuff, albeit different stuff, but they were into just as much stuff as Freddie Mercury does. But for some reason, he's the only one that looks like he was causing trouble in the band, while everyone else was off just being perfect little people. And that's not fair. That's not fair to Freddie. I don't think everyone keeps talking about how much Freddie would love this movie. I don't think he would. I really don't.
Right.
I think Freddie Mercury would like the movie. See, I agree with you. I think there's an interesting element to think about when a person is involved, especially someone like Hulk Hogan, who's done some pretty, you know, some very big things in the news that were very controversial and negative. I would imagine that those stories are popular enough that if he kept them from the film, that would be a glaring issue.
I mean, what about Bohemian Rhapsody? Like, there were...
Well, what was glaringly pulled from Bohemian Rhapsody, like a negative story about Freddie Mercury?
I think it was just the degree of, I mean, like, he led arguably an R-rated lifestyle.
And no, I get that.
I think
people
felt a little betrayed by like showing hints of a little cocaine on a tray. Like, I'm sorry, like that's.
See, I don't think Bohemian Rhapsody was a Freddie Mercury movie. I think Bohemian Rhapsody was a Queen film. It was fronted as his story, but at the end of the day, I thought Bohemian Rhapsody was a celebration of Queen's music. And to me, like, that's why I loved Bohemian Rhapsody, was the whole entirety of Live Aid, which, by the way, cool little side note, if you buy the Blu-ray for Bohemian Rhapsody, you get the entire Live Aid performance that they shot. They took two of the songs out of the movie version, but they actually did film the full thing.
That was the first day of shooting. Bryan Singer, right? Yeah, if it was first day of shooting, I'm assuming it had to be Bryan Singer.
The first shot of the entire production of Bohemian Rhapsody was the shot at the top of Wembley up to the piano as Rami took the piano to play Bohemian Rhapsody. But that being said, it's funny, I completely agree with where you're coming from. From an ethical standpoint of someone being involved in their own telling of a story. Bohemian, I don't feel as strongly as you do about that aspect of it, because I felt Bohemian was just a celebration of Queen's music. I don't consider it a Freddie Mercury story. So that, if you do, then that's where you're kind of having the disconnect with those, with Brian and Roger being involved. Elton John, that's the thing. I'm thinking of glaringly negative things that have happened in these people's lives. Like, Hulk Hogan has very big stories about him. There's things he said that were very controversial. Wasn't there a tape that was made about? Mm-hmm. I think all these things are going to be in the movie, because if they're so popular, that if they left them out, it would be so overwhelming.
But I don't even know if that's going to be a. I mean, I think the movie's going to be about the 70s and then like the Hulkamania in the 80s.
Oh, really?
I don't even know if it'll get to.
Yeah, maybe.
That's what I read.
I mean, to make a parallel to a movie that's opening this weekend, Fighting With My Family, right? Which the wrestler Paige was very heavily involved in.
Right. You like that movie, Jake.
I did like that
movie. The movie's really good.
So does that draw a line with you about that her being involved in the story?
You know, I asked Stephen Merchant about that, about the dangers of having someone involved and being able to have her influence. And he said that there, you know, for every story that she told him, he would go to someone else and tell them that story. And then they might go, yeah, maybe. And there's a scene in the film where it implies that she's being picked on in this training camp by this group of girls. And one of the revelations in the film is that it's not really so much that she's being picked on, is that she's also kind of being mean to them. Mm. And so that's why, he said in that regard, he tried to show both sides of it. It's her version of, she feels like she's being picked on by these, you know, super cute girls. But then the cute girl's going, you know, you've never once tried to talk to us, and you've never once been friendly to us, and you've never once tried to get to know us. So he addressed that. He acknowledged both sides of that and said he tried to put both sides of that in the film in there, which I thought he did a pretty good job of.
So here's my question, because I think Jake's point is interesting, because I agree mostly with what you're saying in the sense of ethical idea of having them tell their story. Bohemian aside, I completely agree with you. I'm trying to think of very famous biopics that have happened over the years. Walk the Line is one coming to mind. Was Cash's family involved in that at all?
I really don't know. But again, on the flip side, like, Braveheart is not an accurate telling of William Wallace.
Right.
Spoiler alert, William Wallace was not involved in the making of Braveheart.
What about Greatest Showman, which is a completely different...
But I don't think anyone goes to Greatest Showman expecting to truly learn about P.T. Barnum.
That's the true thing. Like, if the movie's entertaining, then I'll judge it that way. Like,
Bohemian Rhapsody's entertaining. So yeah. Does that bother you that Roger Taylor and
Bohemian Rhapsody
May?
Sells itself as...
The story of Queen.
This is the story of Queen. Yeah.
But I mean, technically speaking, the things that happened in that film with the music did happen. So,
did
like,
they? No,
I don't. I'm talking about the music.
There's
live
no point where a band member, while everyone was fighting, grabs a bass and goes dun dun dun.
No,
dun, dun.
How do you know?
Okay, but that's the
how do you know?
Because I read a book.
Well, but my point being is though, like, you're condensing 2 hours. Did you like Argo? Oh, now this is interesting. This is interesting. You loved Argo. Tony Mendez did interviews for that movie. That's completely what you're saying.
But here's the deal. Here's the deal with Argo, though. Argo changes the speed in which they go through the airport. It does not change the entire like foundation upon which the story rests. Bohemian Rhapsody makes a villain out of Freddie Mercury because how dare he go solo and break up the band? He was the last member of Queen to ever go solo. There's nothing in Argo that fundamentally changes the structure of the story like that.
Was there an airport runway sequence with cops? Did that actually
happen? No, but that doesn't change. No, it doesn't.
It completely increases
the speed upon which they get onto the airplane.
But
Jake, last thing I'll say.
My point being is that I agree with Jake, but I do think Jake is letting certain movies slide. Like Argo, Tony was involved heavily in that film. Should he have been?
It doesn't matter.
No,
it's an entertaining film.
I know. So where's that line drawn then? So is Rocket Man a movie that you can't enjoy?
No, he might enjoy it.
Because Elton's involved?
I might enjoy it.
It might be great.
I might enjoy it.
Yeah. It might be great.
Sean, where are you on this real fast? Do you mind if people are involved that were involved in the story?
I think the movie would inherently be more interesting if the people didn't have control. If you could tell all aspects of their story. The thing I was talking about with Fighting With My Family is that Paige has a lot of really dark things in her story that the movie doesn't go anywhere near, that I didn't even know until I started researching to do an interview with her and then found out all this other stuff. And I was like, oh, this stuff, I didn't even know how she ended her career. Like, she has a bad neck injury and like, it doesn't get into any of that stuff. And if it wasn't a movie that she was involved in, I think the filmmakers would have had more freedom and courage to go after bigger things like that. And they don't, but it's still a good movie.
But the flip side of that, when you have the people really involved, could you get more information?
Possibly.
Do you know more accuracy?
Yeah, sure, possibly.
So, it's funny. I see where Jake's coming from, but then I also think that there's a balance. I don't think it's black and white.
And I also see where you're coming from. I think it's a dangerous precedent to set just start letting people be involved in their own story.
I agree. Yeah. I just don't think it's black and white, though.
At a distance, you interview them, you get a ton of information, and then you go, cool, thanks very much, have a nice day, and then you go off and you make the movie.
Okay.
I don't think they should ever step foot on the set of the movie you're making.
All right. I want to note that we learned today that A Quiet Place 2 is coming. It has a release date.
Electric Boogaloo.
John Krasinski coming back to direct, and confirmed today, too, that Emily Blunt is coming back as well. So I think that deflates some of the ideas that this was going to be an anthology-type story told in the same universe, but maybe following a different family.
Bummer. I like the idea of their story ending with a gun cock.
That should have been the end. Like, that would have been it.
Yeah, I think that's the perfect. You know, like, imagine you're reading a collection of short stories.
Yeah,
and you know, one of the short stories just ends with like this sense of uncertainty. I think, and then you move to the next one. You're like, oh my god! Like, I don't want an answer to that. I don't want an answer to what comes after that.
Yeah,
the movie's gonna open and Mary Poppins is gonna come out of the bathtub. That's what's gonna happen, because like, I remember seeing like this crazy like cool connected.
So maybe we'll get a good Mary Poppins sequel.
Yeah. That movie's good.
It's not good, Sean. It's not.
What's wrong with you two?
It's not good.
It's so entertaining.
It's not entertaining.
Anyway.
But no, A Quiet Place, I know I joke with you guys. I didn't love it as much as you guys did, but I thought it was an incredibly solid directorial debut. Or not debut. It was one. He already did The Howlers before that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which he came in studio for. He was really nice. It was a really solid horror film. I had issues with some of the things, but I mean, that movie was so successful. I do wonder, though, does the bit wear off?
Yeah.
Like, and I think Lego Movie was a great example that we all experienced, which I liked Lego Movie, but the second one. But there was something while watching. I remember Jake texting me after I got out of it, and he goes, "What'd you think?" I'm like, "It was good, but I mean, like, I just felt like I had seen it already." And I just wonder where they go with Quiet Place 2. Is this a necessary sequel, or is it being made because of the box office success?
Right.
And I think that's a question that needs to be answered. Like, I would assume Krasinski's smart enough to go, okay, are we making this for the right reasons or the wrong reasons? But I don't know. Sean, do you have any intel on where they're going to go with this?
No. And in fact, he never really had an idea for a follow-up, and has said that multiple times in
that worries me.
Interviews. But, I mean, it doesn't mean that he can't, you know, from the time that it took off, that he put a lot of thought into sitting down and cracking a story about where could it go. I mean, I like the way in the story how they would hint at other camps of people. You'd see the lights come on the surface. And
yeah, I would actually love if they just did stories on the different camps. Because remember, at one point, the other camp just doesn't turn their light on.
Yeah.
Which implies something happened to them. I would love to know what happened to them. Like, go over to the other camp and show me. You know, like, you don't even have to go to the other side of the country. Just go 14 acres away.
But so that could explain how Blunt is part of it then, if the movie primarily focuses. If the movie focuses on somebody else.
Yeah.
There's a scene in that film, by the way, and I'm probably gonna botch the material that they were using, but they were in that barn, and it was like was it wood chips that they were like diving into? It was like a sand.
It was a corn silo.
Yeah, a silo.
That scene is unbelievable. Like that was like my favorite scene in the movie, and I remember seeing a behind the scenes footage, and props to John Krasinski, who shot the movie on film, which was like incredibly crazy, like to think that he shot 35mm for one of his second, you know, or one of his like earlier films in directorial. But you know, that movie, that scene was unbelievable. And there's a really cool behind the scenes shot of Krasinski doing something directorial with a 35mm camera. It was like the Panavision. It was like awesome to see. I'm excited, but to Sean's point, if John didn't have a idea at the end of it, I want to know if this is being done for the right reasons.
Well, and, but you know, I commend him for that, because he just wanted to make a good movie. You know, it's not like it's a franchise, like, because everything's a franchise. Like, he just had this good idea. He carried it through to its conclusion. Like Jake said, it's a cliffhanger ending, but it's also satisfying. You know,
What do you guys think is the most unnecessary sequel of all time?
Oh god,
Matrix. Matrix 2.
No,
Avatar 2.
No, Matrix 2.
Matrix 2. Unnecessary. I'm talking about the first one was perfect from beginning to end. It didn't need a continuation.
Godfather 3.
Fletch Lives.
I'm trying to think. I think Matrix 2.
Caddyshack 2. Caddyshack 2 is
horrendous. I feel like there was more Matrix story to be told. I just don't think that they told it the right way.
The Dark Knight?
I think
Hey!
I love The Dark Knight, man.
Mary Poppins?
Yeah, you know what? Jake, there you go. Mary Poppins returns. Unnecessary.
But, you know, but speaking of Avatar, though, this almost to me kind of falls in that same category of like, okay, Krasinski, I'm excited about you as a director now. Like, show me what else you can do. Like, don't go back to the well, man. Like, I know you can do that. Show me, like, try something else and fail, but at least try something else.
Yeah, I guess. Well, let's. I mean, he's going to be Jack Ryan for two more seasons on Hulu or Amazon or wherever.
Yeah.
Amazon Prime.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's busy with that. Okay, so we have, it's Friday, and Sunday is the Oscars. And as Kevin pointed out at the top of the show, this show started off as awards blend, where we would do a lot of awards coverage, and we've been doing it throughout the course of this season. And so it's finally time for us to give our predictions in every single category, except for the shorts, because we didn't get a chance to check out all the shorts. And so next week...
We're going to do the pants, though, instead.
We will do the pants instead. Score, you guys can score our predictions, and the winner... is going to get burgers. The bet is burgers in some way, shape, or form, but we're not quite sure how we're going to pull this off.
Well, we all need to pick one then, because so Jake obviously is water burger.
Right.
I'm In-N-Out. Are you In-N-Out too?
No, mine's Shake Shack. You babies are paying up if I win.
Dude, I'm not taking a mortgage out of my condo, man. What are you?
Then beat me. Then you gotta beat me at the game. That's all.
They credit check me when I go to Shake Shack.
What's that? You want fries? Did you bring your first four shots?
Fine, you cheap MFs. I'll do Five Guys.
No, it doesn't matter. You're not gonna win anyway. Do whatever you want.
Shake Shack. Okay. Keep what you want.
Yeah, but you're not gonna win, so it doesn't matter.
It is crazy, though, that the same thing you can get at Shake Shack is $17, and then an In-N-Out, it's $8.95.
Because it's quality.
We might go at each other, but at least we're the burgers of the people.
Yes.
We're the burgers of the working man.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
I am upper class. If I've not established that much over the course of this podcast... I have a refined tastes. So we're going to rifle through.
Right, so that's the bet, right?
Yeah, that's the bet.
Whoever,
that's a good bet.
How does this work? So the person who gets the most right.
Correct, yes.
Yeah. Then how do the other two play
The
out?
Next time we're all together in a place where we can get those burgers, the other two pay. The other two have to split the bill.
Or should we do it where the person who gets the least right pays for everybody?
Oh,
oh, that's fun.
Yeah.
So the person that gets the least right has to pay, and the person that gets the most right. So what you really want to do is just be the middle guy, because then you're good.
Then you just get to eat for free.
we didn't really figure this out before the show.
I like the person who gets least has to pay. Yeah.
And the person who gets the most picks the place.
Yeah. Perfect.
Picks the place. All there right. you go. Okay, good. Go. And Gabe's going to keep track of us as we go. We want you guys to play along at home, so mark down all your picks and then score them during the Oscars broadcast, and then you can share with us on Twitter right after the show how many you guys got right. So we're going to go through these really quickly and pick our picks. So visual effects, Avengers Infinity War, Christopher Robin, First Man, Ready Player One, and Solo, a Star Wars story.
Yeah, what people
you're
realize,
all a bunch of assholes.
What people don't realize in Solo is that the actual vocal cords that were used to say the Solo name scene were done through performance capture. Someone mo-capped the vocals that came out of Alden's mouth.
Oh, I
That's all
terrible.
Done through performance capture.
You know what's funny, you assholes, is I was just about to say how good of an episode this was.
It's
I was like
great.
Literally about to like stop this episode and go, this is going so well. But no, screw you guys. I quit this freaking show. You guys suck. I wasn't gonna say better. Anything about all of your all stupid black and white foreign language streaming all film.
Right. I'm picking Avengers Infinity War.
Yeah, definitely. No question. And solely based on the performance capture effects on Brolin.
All right.
There is nothing like the photorealism of the way they... obviously, he's an alien, but the expressions on him... You know what's brilliant? You know why it's going to win, Sean? If you watch the film closely more and more, Thanos starts growing facial hair.
Really?
Throughout the film.
Really?
Yeah. And then you can actually see his stubble coming in as the story progresses. It's that detailed.
That's
like,
crazy.
There's like sweat, pores. I saw Alita again the other day, and I was like, that's another step beyond
the visual effects in Alita were very good.
Woo, like there, if you see it, if you saw Alita in IMAX 3D, when you go to a close up of her face, the pores, it's like you're looking at a 4K shot of a human being.
Right,
it's unbelievable. But anyway, so we're all going Avengers on that.
The line reading that Thanos gives, which convinces me that Brolin belongs in the supporting actors category, is when he touches his cheek and he says ruefully, "All that for a drop of blood. Like, you guys threw everything you have at me, and this is the best you could do." It's such a great performance. How does it get overlooked?
I've been arguing performance capture for years. I think
Sean, what have you done?
I know. I'm just,
It's all right.
That line is amazing. Okay, costume design.
I agree.
The Ballad of Buster Scruggs.
Wait, what are we doing?
Costume design. Ballad of Buster Scruggs, Black Panther, The Favorite, Mary Poppins Returns, and Mary Queen of Scots.
Black Panther.
I say The Favorite.
I am going to say, I'm going to say Black Panther. Good. We're going to.
And Favorite is actually probably the safer choice because those are really good costumes.
They are.
I think Panther. I've seen a lot of press about the costume designer for Black Panther.
Yeah.
I saw her the other day. I was actually going to see Captain Marvel in LA the other day, and I was walking through the mall in Century City, and right below me was a huge purple carpet that said Black Panther on it, and they were doing a whole thing about the costumes in that movie.
Oh, wow. Ruth Carter, her name is. Like, she's been doing some great costume work over the years.
It almost boils down to, like, do you think that the Academy is going to be more traditional in their pick, which I think The Favorite would fall into the more traditional, or do you think that they have the balls to give it? I wanted to give it to Black Panther. I just always lean on the side of they're going to be boring and go more traditional, which is why I'm picking The Favorite.
Yeah, and for people who are listening to this now, we're picking what we think is going to win, not what we want to win.
Correct.
All right, makeup and hair. We have three. Border, Mary Queen of Scots, and Vice.
Vice.
I'll say Vice also.
And admittedly, I haven't seen Border, but Vice. I heard Border's incredible. Have you seen that?
I haven't seen it.
I heard it's unbelievable.
Really?
You got to go Vice because of Bale. I mean, you know who has great makeup in that film is Amy Adams. Mm. I think there's an understated value to her because she's amazing in that film. I think that might be one of the best supporting roles of last year. She was unbelievable.
Quick random makeup note, because I feel like it's taken a long time for Hollywood to actually start learning how to do really good aging makeup. Have you guys watched True Detective this season?
No.
The aging makeup they use on Stephen Dorff and Mahershala Ali, it's probably what they're going to look like in 50 years. It's
really
astounding. Astounding work.
Wait till you guys see the de-aging of Sam Jackson and Captain Marvel.
Right.
And it's not just two scenes. The guy's in the whole movie. And you're talking about flawless.
Like, that excites me de-aging. About Scorsese's Irishman.
Flawless.
Yeah. I know.
But I'm telling you, they have mastered it.
It's done.
They could do it now.
I think it's cool.
Jackson looks... It's unbelievable. But by the way, we haven't done a show since this happened. We got to mention this. Hair and makeup is one of the categories that was supposed to not be happening in the live broadcast. They've obviously
the Academy listens to Real Blend.
Yeah, so you will now see all 24, including hair and makeup, which was not going to be in there live on the show, not being edited and put back into the broadcast later, and being disrespectful. We're gonna get them all.
I'm fascinated to how this telecast is gonna look. All right, original song. Do I have to go through all of them, or do we all say Shallow?
Shallow.
Shallow? Okay. Original score.
All right.
Original score. Black Klansman.
Justin Hurwitz, First Man, even though he's not in
Black
there.
Black Panther. If Beale
Street
Can
Talk.
You heard
Kevin's pick.
Isle of Dogs. And Mary Poppins Returns. How did Isle of Dogs get in there?
Do you mind going one more time on that? I'm sorry, Sean. I interrupted you. My Justin Hurwitz. I said Justin Hurwitz. I'm sorry.
I know. Black Klansman. Black Panther. If Beale Street Could Talk, Isle of Dogs, and Mary Poppins Returns.
Beale Street.
Beale Street.
I'm saying Black Klansman.
Because you interviewed the guy recently, didn't you?
I did, and I love the score.
It's good music. That's a great score.
It's a great score.
That's a great
score. I think that score is used incorrectly.
Beale Street is one of the greatest scores
it's really good.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on with me, but in the past 2 weeks... I've been listening to the First Man score every day. I put on the
to
landing.
To me, that sounds like you.
there's nothing wrong with you.
I, I put on the landing every Thursday, every Friday. I do a movie review package for like the different Fox stations, the O and O's, whatever. And when I'm writing that, I put on Landing. Gabe does too. It's Justin Hurwitz's score for First Man. The fact that it's not in there is mind blowing because didn't he win everything leading up to the Oscars?
Yes, he did.
Which makes no sense. And it is one of my favorite scores I've ever heard. It is incredible. Incredible. But Britell's, by the way, Nicholas Britell, if I'm pronouncing his first name right, he did the score for Vice and for
Beale Street.
Beale Street. Is Vice nominated too?
No.
Okay, so just okay. All right, so Beale Street's my choice.
All right, I regret my pick, but I'm going to stick with it.
No, stick with
That's where I'm going to lose my burger right there. Production design: Black Panther, First Man, The Favorite, Mary Poppins Returns, and Roma.
First Man,
The Favorite.
I say The Favorite.
Okay.
All right.
Sound mixing: Black Panther, Bohemian Rhapsody, First Man, Roma, and A Star Is Born.
Wow.
I say Bohemian Rhapsody.
I say Star Is Born.
I say First Man.
Okay.
Oh, no. Oh, wait. I kind of want to say Star Is Born. I'm going to say Star Is Born. I'm going to say Star Is Born.
All right. Perfect.
Yeah. Sound mixing. I'm going with Stars Born.
All right. Come to the right side.
I said Bohemian.
Bradley was tireless in mixing.
Oh.
I know he was. Sound editing. Black Panther, Bohemian Rhapsody, First Man, A Quiet Place, and Roma.
I say First Man.
First Man.
I will say Bohemian Rhapsody.
Okay.
All right. Film editing, major category, huge repercussions on what's going to take Best Picture. Usually, we have Black Klansman, Bohemian Rhapsody, Green Book, The Favorite, and Vice.
I'm actually going to say that film editing is going to have no impact
on Best Picture. Best Picture, Jake. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, on Best Picture. Yeah, sorry, I lost my train of thought. Yeah, I'm just going to go with Vice.
It's funny because I really, really dislike the editing in Vice, but I do think that the Academy likes it. So I'm going against myself completely here because I think the editing ruined that film, in my opinion.
It's the most apparently edited
right.
film.
Right. It's very edited. Like, we're talking about, like, if the editing is a character in the movie, which is strange.
Right. Like, people who don't know what editing is, you can explain it to them by,
exactly.
Do you see this?
But yeah. I can't get over that viral clip of the scene from Bohemian Rhapsody with all the cuts in it. Like, how is that a nominated movie?
Yeah, but you can do that with any movie.
I know,
movie.
Yeah.
That's under scrutiny. But I'm going to go Vice only because, like, exactly what Jake just said, it's very obviously edited.
Man, what am I going to go with? I'll go with Vice also for editing. I'll go with Vice for editing. Okay. All right, foreign language film.
Roma.
Okay.
Do you think Cold War wins because Roma takes picture?
No.
Or do you... okay.
That's a real dangerous thing, man, because then in theory, it's possible that Roma could walk away with neither of them.
All right, Roma.
I think it's Roma.
I say Roma.
Does Roma winning foreign language affect its best picture chance?
It could.
That's the more interesting question.
Yes. I think it could. All right. Documentary feature: Free Solo, Hale County this evening, Minding the Gap, Of Fathers and Sons, and RBG.
Is there a part in... have you guys seen Free Solo yet?
Yeah.
Yes.
That's what I'm picking. That's my pick, is Free Solo.
Is there a part in Free Solo where like someone walks into like a restaurant and asks for like food, but they can't afford it. So they go, do you want it for free, Solo? Does that happen in the movie? Because if it does, then I'll go ahead and choose that.
Yeah, that was such a stretch.
Yeah.
Such a reach.
we're giving him his first name. We have to give him his first name at some point, right? We have to. we really do.
I'm going to go with, Minding the Gap.
Jake, what was yours?
Free Solo.
Oh, yeah, Free Solo.
Don't encourage him.
It's his first name. Come on, they have to give him a first name.
All right.
Have Han yet.
Now we get into the fun ones. Cinematography.
I mean, I think this is easy, right?
Cold War, The Favorite, Never Look Away, Roma, and A Star Is Born.
I want to say one thing because I know we're all going to choose Roma. I want to give a shout out.
You think you know what I'm picking?
Oh yeah, it's obvious. We're all going with this, right? I mean, am I wrong? Are we all not going with Roma? Are you serious?
I'm not in the bag yet.
Okay, well then I'll take Roma. You guys do your choices, and then I'll say what I'm going to say.
I choose Roma.
I want to choose Cold War.
I know you do,
but I don't know how risky that is, because this is where you start to talk about the fact that like Cold War feels like it's going to surface somewhere, and is it the foreign language, or do they give it cinematography? He's not going to get director.
The only thing to your point, Sean, is that I could see cinematographers going like, "Hey, Alfonso, like stay in your lane. This is our job."
Right.
No.
And then purposefully voting against him. I'm still going with Roma, but I
like
could
if
see...
Roma had Chivo's name on it, it would get it instantly.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. I see.
But cinematographers know that Chivo was initially on the project and then couldn't do
but
it.
But he didn't
because
do it.
Of...
But he didn't do it.
But Roma but is.
But cinematographers
exquisite.
Say. Yeah.
Roma is so beautiful. I gotta pick
masterful.
Roma. It's so
I
beautiful.
Saw Cold War in a theater recently.
Yeah.
It's gorgeous. Don't get me wrong. But it doesn't look as clean as Roma does. Roma's perfect.
But I love Star Is Born cinematography also.
That's what I wanted to bring up. So Matthew Libatique, who's not going to win this, I always thought this was so crazy that Venom and Star Is Born opened in the same weekend and he shot
both
of them.
Shot both.
It's cool. And but Liberty, I want to. If you go back and watch the opening of Star Is Born during Black Eyes, the way he uses the lights on the stage as like almost a way to transition in shots, and like the flares become cuts. And Bradley talked a lot about being on stage with Metallica, being behind Lars Ulrich and watching out to the crowd, and that's how he wanted the perspective of the shots to look. That's a really well shot. Movie. And the best shot in that film, the best series of shots in that movie, in my opinion, is the Lady Gaga walk off the bus to the backstage area before she takes the stage for Shallow. And I remember hearing Cooper talk about wanting to give audiences the way it looks when you go backstage at a show. And I've been backstage at some shows before, and it's not like a pretty environment. Like you're walking through, like, and if you remember the shot in the movie, like Gaga's walking, like these workers come out in front of her with a table. Like it's like you're in a gym or something like that. It doesn't look like at all like you would think it would look. And I thought it was cool how he took us and then edited with that track that they're playing live on the stage. I think it goes into Alibi, I think, and eventually. But it's awesome. I mean, I think it's a really well shot movie. It's not gonna win, but. Shout out to Matthew Libatique.
Absolutely. All right, let's go to original screenplay. We have The Favorite, First Reformed, Green Book, Roma, and Vice.
Green Book.
I say The Favorite.
I say Green Book. Wow.
Yeah, because nothing says that beautiful dialogue like you people love the fried chicken.
I know. I can't believe
I just want you guys to know that's what you voted for. I hope you can sleep tonight.
No. We're not voting. We're telling you.
I know.
Think
I know.
It's going to win. All right. Adapted screenplay.
Who says that line? Is that Vigo?
You people love the fried chicken? Yeah.
Vigo says that line. That's why it's in the car.
I'm giving it the nod because someone wrote in a script, this guy folds a giant pizza in half and eats it whole.
But the thing is, maybe they didn't. Maybe that was just Vigo.
All right. Well,
by the way, Vigo is so good in that movie.
He's great.
It's unbelievable. He's
really
so good in that
movie. All right, adapted screenplay. The Ballad of Buster Scruggs. Joel and Ethan Coen get a Netflix movie into the Oscar race. How about that? Black Klansman. Can You Ever Forgive Me? If Beale Street Could Talk and A Star Is Born.
Beale Street.
I say Black Klansman. I think they're giving it to Spike Lee.
I'm going with Can You Ever Forgive Me?
Really?
Yeah.
Because of the WGA?
Yeah.
Oh, did they win the WGA?
I don't know why my voice got so high right there.
Yeah.
Huh.
Strictly
really?
On that. It'll end up going to the Coens now at this point.
Yeah.
All right. Animated feature.
I think we all know this.
Meh.
Spider-Man.
Spider-Verse.
Give the Oscar to Spider-Man.
That's the only category where I truly will be devastated if that movie doesn't win.
Well, that it's a lock.
I hope so.
Right? I think that's a lock.
Yeah.
So we're all going Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse officially.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Supporting actor. Mahershala Ali. Adam Driver. Sam Elliott. Richard E. Grant. And Sam Rockwell.
From this point forward, can we give our will win, should win?
Sure.
Okay. Well, obviously Mahershala is going to win this, but I'm hoping for a Sam Elliott surprise.
I pick Mahershala to win. Yeah, I'd love to live in a world where Sam Elliott has an Oscar, but
he deserves it. But and I was watching I was going through Instagram on Stars Born today actually, because I was trying to pull some images. And they released that sequence when Sam Elliott backs the truck up after Bradley says it was your voice that I admired, which is just devastating. That and the 12 notes sequence, it's a masterclass performance. Like, it's an unbelievable performance. And I want to shout out to Warner Brothers. I like the way they cut their trailers and their promos for that movie. It was all like in silence.
Yeah.
And like they would throw up like the quotes or like a different shot. And it was like, I don't know, it was like really well edited. But that shot alone, I think, deserves the award.
I want to say Richard E. Grant could steal this.
It's possible. He's like a favorite this award season.
But he would have needed to have won something.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. So, all right, I'm going to say Mahershala.
Who's your should win?
I actually think Mahershala is a should too. I think he's great in it.
But you don't think it's like,
I know that they're both leads.
To put Mahershala. No, yeah, exactly. So to me, it's unfair to put Mahershala up against Sam Elliott.
But that's what I'm saying.
I agree.
So I'm saying will win, and I do think he should win because I think he's really good in the movie.
He is good in the movie, but I think Elliott stands. I don't know. They're both great.
Elliott best represents what it means to be a supporting actor.
Right.
See, I would argue Mahershala does too, because Mahershala, even though I think Mahershala is a lead, Viggo is as good as he is because of Mahershala, which is kind of the definition of a supporting role. But here's the reality of the situation. It's Viggo's movie. It's his story. Right? I mean, I don't know if you guys would agree with that or not. I think it's Viggo's story.
Like, Linda Cardellini is supporting
from the perspective
in that movie.
Of
right. But Mahershala is, and we all know this, it's all about how the studio positions the star.
Sure.
Into what category. I mean, they could have easily put him in lead, but they knew that he would have a, I mean,
well, they'd compete against each other. They would compete against each other.
Right.
And
so, it's funny, I think Emma Stone is the lead of the favorite.
Yes.
I think Coleman's the supporting
without
character.
Question. Yes.
I don't understand that. That makes no sense to me. But I would say probably they thought, okay, Emma won leading for La La Land, so let's move her to supporting.
Would Coleman have a better shot at winning if she were in supporting?
Yes. 100%. She would be the front runner, in my opinion.
Interesting.
No, that's Hugh Jackman.
Yeah.
All right, supporting actress. Amy Adams for Vice. Marina de Tavira for Roma. Regina King for Beale Street Could Talk. Emma Stone for The Favorite and Rachel Weisz for The Favorite. I'm saying it's Regina King.
Regina King.
Yeah, Regina King is definitely the will win. She won the Globe, right? Globe and Critics' Choice. SAG, she wasn't nominated. So Blunt won there, right? And then...
Yes.
I think Amy Adams would have more of a shot if she had won SAG. But she didn't even win SAG without Regina King being in the race.
Well, I find it unfortunate that she's not really even been talked about like a lot. Like, that's an amazing performance.
Not her year.
But I will say this. The person I want to win is Marina de Tavira.
Yeah.
I think her performance is so understated and so devastating. If you go back and watch that film again, like the goodbye to the husband, just the whole... Her entire arc. There's a sequence in that film that I think is her Oscar moment. It's the sequence when she's telling the kids... Where the father's not coming back. It's all one shot. It's behind the kid's back that she's talking to, and then they immediately go out to that crab with the wedding. I mean, it is, she's amazing, man. I And I think there could be, I've seen some experts talking about her possibly upsetting, but I think Regina King has this.
It feels
for
like
sure.
Every category could honestly could have.
Yeah. I would not bet the house on any category.
Right. Not this
the
year.
Only one that I think is the actual official lock this year is probably Mahershala and Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Yes, yeah, I would agree.
Even Mahershala. I think he's a lock. I don't think there's no like Christoph Waltz and Inglourious Basterds. There's no
I kind of like it though.
There's a lot of them that are like 97-98% sure yeah. one thing, but there's no one that I would slide over my life savings and go, it's this person.
And
I think this show is going to be amazing. And I think because of the disastrous reporting around it, everybody's expecting it to be a disaster. So we're all going in with very low expectations. I don't know if that translates to being great, but I have a feeling, because it's official, Queen's opening the show, correct?
I don't know if they're opening it, but they're performing.
They're opening.
They could.
We reported. So, and I've already started to envision it in my mind of how they would open it. I've heard rumors that Rami's going to get on stage. I wish I had a source for where I heard. I just heard this in conversation. But I think you open the show. It's a silhouette piano. Rami's on the piano. You have Adam sing the Bohemian Rhapsody intro. You just do the intro. You can't do the whole song, obviously.
Right.
It'd be funny, like Mike Myers walks out and goes, guys, wrap this up. You're too long.
Or if Gabe came out.
Gabe came out. But by the way, editing point I want to make, one of my favorite edits in Bohemian Rhapsody is when they're in the middle of Live Aid and right as Freddie's saying Losers, they cut to Mike Myers in the office listening to the Live Aid show. That was cool. I know it's a little on the nose, but I thought it was funny.
It's pretty on the nose.
It's on the nose.
Fake teeth.
I liked it. But that being said, I do want to say, I lost my train of thought here. I'm sorry. I'm like so tired.
They're opening the show.
Oh, yeah. So I think you open it up. You have Rami at the piano because he obviously can play the piano for that part. Adam sings, then you just jump into two massive rock songs. You do We Will Rock You, and then my anchor today said you do The Show Must Go On. And then think about the energy the show would have at that 4-minute mark when that performance is done. Because
when Timberlake opened up with Can't Stop the Feeling or whatever the name of that song was. It was a great opening.
I'm telling you, that energy with Queen, I think you start the show right.
I'm going to make an argument too.
Where's Kendrick, by the way?
He's not performing.
See, I think that he's going to be there. I think why wouldn't he do it?
I think if Bohemian Rhapsody had one more month to campaign, that would be the front runner for Best Picture.
But it is, it's a possibility. It won the Globe.
It just feels like the momentum is starting to swing toward that movie. In a way that if they had a little more time, they would convince people to believe in it. In a way that people don't right now.
No movie last year has any more people come up to me about and said they loved it than Bohemian Rhapsody.
It's almost made $1 billion.
People loved. I love it. I've watched it 4 times. My wife, Lauren, and I got the steel book, and the other night we were eating dinner, we just watched the entire Live Aid performance.
I wish you guys saw Jake's face.
I know. Jake doesn't like it.
Jake was so surprised.
Jake, at least admit one thing.
It's more along the lines of like, how do you have the time to watch a movie 4 times?
Well, I saw it 3 times in theaters throughout the events that we did. And then I saw it, 3.5, I guess, technically speaking. We watched half of it the other day. But remember, Jake, I went to London and did the premiere, so I saw it at the junket screening, and then I saw it again at Wembley Arena with 7,000 people. I'll tell you right now, being in that room with Queen and 7,000 people and Rami and Lucy and everybody and 7,000 fans right next door to Wembley Stadium, that was electric, man. It was electric in there. But
back on track. Yeah, we gotta get back on track. Best actor. Well, this will speak to the point that the fact that like I'm not 100% confident in any of the rest of my choices for these top categories. Lead actor, Christian Bale, Bradley Cooper, Willem Dafoe, Rami Malek, Viggo Mortensen.
3 months ago, give me your choice.
3 months ago?
Bradley Cooper.
Bradley Cooper.
Yeah. 3 months ago, I say Cooper. 2 months ago, I say Bale. Right now, I say Rami Malek.
Rami.
Guys, think about this for one second.
I say Rami also.
I want, I, I, I want you to transport back to me with me to September at TIFF.
Yeah.
Yeah, Gabe, add in some Back to the Future like effects. We all walked out of Star Is Born. It was the absolute front runner.
Yeah.
No question.
Yes.
Cooper was gonna win. Picture done. Award season was over. And to Jake's point, he said,
you
don't,
and I got into a little
off.
Bit of a tizzy yep. because I said yep. it's too early. I said, yep. no, there's no such thing as a lock.
You were right though. You were right. Jake was right about that. He said, be careful, because backlash occurs. Now, I wouldn't say backlash happened with Star Is Born. I just think it fizzled out.
You know what's funny? To your point, it wasn't that there was a massive backlash, because I never felt, because I used the example of La La Land and Social Network. And the reason I say that I don't think there was backlash is because I don't think A Star Is Born was ever loved as much as Social Network or La La Land. It never reached that level of fandom.
Oh,
there seemed to be this ceiling
that
it couldn't break out.
There were a lot of people that really loved it. I mean, the soundtrack was popular when it first came out. I mean, I think there's a possibility that it broke too soon. Because any movie has to keep that momentum going for too long, and it's really hard to do.
Does that start killing Toronto? Because that seems to be the... I mean, no, because then I guess Shape of Water came out. Shape of Water came out in Toronto.
So, I don't know. Green Book won Toronto.
Yeah.
That's another thing I'm forgetting. Yeah. God. Yeah. But, you know, but it's fascinating to me to think, fast forwarding, let's go back to the future now. it's an underdog. A Star Is Born is the underdog of the Oscars.
It could only win one Oscar.
Isn't it kind of weirdly poetic that all the other ones only won one Oscar?
Yeah, that is.
Here's my biggest reason problem with what's going on with Star Is Born. Is that it's being judged on the fact that there were three other movies. And I think that it's unfairly being judged that way. Because on its own, it is a brilliant film.
Right.
But it's looked at as, and I've heard this from a lot of people literally say, didn't they make that movie four times?
Yeah.
That's a consensus.
But to your point, I am also now seeing a bit of a turn of the tide where people are going, oh God, because we backlashed against A Star Is Born so much, now Bohemian Rhapsody could win. And a lot of people are going, we're sorry, we'll go back. Please let us go back to A Star Is Born.
That's funny. Well, you know, I think in the industry, people are also saying, all right, first time director. We don't want to necessarily pile on the accolades for him. And I'm sure the knock is still Gaga is not playing anybody outside of a popular singer, and she's just a popular singer. I think a couple of things to factor against it.
Yeah. Wait, Kevin, who did you pick?
So I went Rami, Will, Bradley, should.
They all say Rami. Wow.
Rami, we got to give some perspective here. Rami won the Globe,
the
BAFTA. SAG,
BAFTA.
The BAFTA, and Critics' Choice. No, Critics' Choice. No, Bale.
Bale won.
So if Rami loses, it's to Bale, right?
Probably.
It's got to be. Yeah,
because Viggo hasn't won anything up to this point, right?
Nothing. That would be a big surprise. Can you imagine if Viggo wins?
I thought Viggo had a really good shot, but until all this started playing out. Okay, lead actress. Yalitza.
When did Rami become a front runner, by the way? Jake, when you and I were in London, did you have any inkling?
When we were in London.
Any inkling that Rami would be the front runner for best actor?
I thought Rami would be maybe the fifth spot that could get knocked out of the nominations.
We discussed that.
Yeah.
And now he's the front runner.
It was man, I hope he gets nominated because he was really good.
Yeah,
not
crazy.
He's going to win.
Yeah. I know. I mean, it's crazy.
This season's been nuts. All right, lead actress. Yalitza Aparicio for Roma. Glenn Close for The Wife. Olivia Colman for The Favorite. Lady Gaga for A Star Is Born, and Melissa McCarthy for Can You Ever Forgive Me?
I think we all have the same one here, right? I mean, and it's not because we want it, but because of it's just because of sheer frontrunner element of it. Of course, Glenn Close.
Yeah, but I mean, come on, Glenn Close needs an Oscar.
See, then there's the inherent problem.
I agree with you, but I'm just saying, not as a voting member, as an acceptor of reality. Reality
it's a career
being,
award.
She's going to win. Therefore, I'm okay with Glenn Close living in a world where Glenn Close has an Oscar. If anything, just so we don't have to see her fake surprised face anymore.
True.
It's a career. I'm so sick of that. Me?
Yeah,
look on her face every time she wins.
Oh,
I have a question.
Yeah.
So, I can't remember the month. It was right around what month did Mission Impossible Fallout come out?
Greatest month of all time.
Was it July or
it was
May?
It was late. I think it was either late July or early. It was late July.
End of July.
Okay. So I was the day before I saw Mission Impossible Fallout, or the day I saw Mission Impossible Fallout, Glenn Close came in our studios to do an interview for The Wife with Christian Slater. And being a True Romance fan, I dressed up as Clarence from the movie. Glenn Close was so cool about it. But as she was in that lobby and I'm like talking to her, we're like hanging out for like 30 minutes in between the interview, outside of the interview, not once did I think to myself, this movie's going anywhere. And what I mean by that is it was a film that I believe was made in 2017, if I'm not mistaken. I'll have to go back and double check the numbers on that. But it felt like a movie that would come out. People would like it. It was very well received. But I didn't think it was gonna be a popular movie. It felt like an independent, you know, art house. Not that I'm putting that down, but it didn't feel like a movie that was gonna have momentum.
Right.
But now looking back on it, it's amazing to me to think that we were sitting there just talking and she's now the front runner.
Right.
It's like crazy to me. Because, I mean, sometimes we'll interview, like, Bale, right, Jake? We know Bale's going to be nominated for Vice. Like, we knew that the minute we sat down with him. I had no idea.
Right.
Not that our performance was bad. It was great. But there was no inkling in my mind that this was going to be an Oscar film.
Yeah.
I wish I could go back in time and, like, appreciate it more.
And yet, I wouldn't be stunned if Olivia Colman or Lady Gaga got it. I would not be stunned
if Gaga got it.
Would you?
Gaga deserves it. Yeah. Gaga deserves it.
All right, director.
But wouldn't
Spike
you be
Lee.
Surprised? Like, if Coleman gets it, I go, okay, all right. But I would be genuinely surprised if Gaga got it.
Yeah, I'd be surprised too. All right. Very surprised, actually.
Director. Spike Lee, Paul Pawlikowski, Yorgos Lanthimos, Alfonso Cuarón, and Adam McKay. What great diversity in the director category. Outstanding work, Director Branch.
I'm going with Bradley Cooper.
Tell me something, girl.
And then the should win is Damien Chazelle. Yeah. Those are my choices.
Oh, Christ.
The alternate universe. Alfonso.
Alfonso.
I'm also saying Alfonso, but I will say don't sleep on Spike Lee. We exist in a world in which people, I think, could, you know, in the same way that you're arguing that they could be giving the career award to Glenn Close, I know a lot of people that want to see Spike Lee with an Oscar.
They do a make good for do the right thing.
Yeah. Now they're actually
going to do the right thing.
Yeah.
That's why I do think they're going to give him screenplay, and then that could be the we're giving him one. But I would not be surprised if they said Spike Lee's name during Best Director.
Sean and I are laughing as Jake's just plowing through my joke. Thank you.
No, Sean. I have for people at home that are wondering like why I'm talking over the guys, I'm having like massive lag right now.
No.
And there'll be like silence and I'll start speaking.
Yeah.
And then 10 seconds into me speaking, I'll realize that they've been having a conversation for the last 10 seconds and I'm just plowing through
it's
and not listening at all.
Well, so, Kevin, no, they're going to wait until the 25th hour of the show to give it to him.
Yeah. To do the right thing. And then... I mean, listen, if he wants to win, they're going to have an inside man in the Oscars to help them achieve this win. You know what I mean? You kind of have to get that going.
Right. Well, and you know what I mean? Like, what are some of the reasons that we want to give him Eden? And they'll say, well, the big reason is because he got game. So
that's a great, great point.
And still listening to you guys.
Because he's been bamboozled for years now at this point. It's terrible.
Yeah.
I can't hear you. My headphones are out.
Completely agree with you on that. I can't think of another Spike Lee. I'm so tired.
All right. Oh, all right. Gabe told me to look down below. Gabe, I'm getting the best picture. Come on. This is the big one. You all have the same pick for the last six categories. This next one is for all the burgers, it looks like, he's saying. So we're at best picture.
Did he actually write that?
Yeah. This is what he said.
Before we say this, can I ask a question? And I don't want to put anyone on the spot
if
you don't know the answer to this. Can someone explain the preferential voting system real fast? Because I don't understand it.
You rank your picks. And so you get the points of like, you know, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. So you can be if very few people have you all as your top. You are only getting X amount of points. You're getting a lot of points, but not from a lot of people. So you almost want to get the middle of the pack from the most people almost thing. So like if everybody has you second, like if some people have Star Is Born as their one, but then everybody puts Roma as two and Roma's two across the board, it gets a ton of sevens, right? But like Favorite might get an 8 or Green Book might get an 8 or so that helps it that way.
Well, I saw an article that said that Star is Born could win based on the preferential system. And I didn't understand why. Because, I mean, I guess it would be if they put it at number two or three, it has a better chance.
Yeah, because it might not be everybody's favorite one, but it might pick up enough two and three votes to power through an overall big score.
Can you write in a movie that's not nominated?
No.
Because I was reading an article the other day about Alfonso Cuarón and what he wanted to vote for this year for Best Picture, but the film wasn't nominated. So I was wondering if he could write it in or
what
not.
What was it?
Roma Mamma Mia.
I'm actually going to quit. I'm actually going to quit now, too. Jake has officially left the podcast.
By the way, I've been sitting on that one for like 2 days. 2 days ago. Literally. Two days ago, that hit my mind. Roma. And I was like, and I was going to text it in the group. Actually, Sean, do you remember yesterday on the text chain when I said, hey, Sean, you there?
Yeah.
That's when I was about to do it.
Right.
Because I have no restraint. And I was like, I need to save this for the show. And I'm so happy
I'm
I
so
did.
Glad you did. It was perfect. All right.
Oh, Mamma Mia. Come on.
Best Picture. Black Panther. Black Klansman. Bohemian Rhapsody. The Favorite. Green Book. Roma. A Star is Born, and Vice. For all the burgers, you're going with.
Well, let's get from perspective here real fast.
Jesus Christ.
No, we have to. Normally, when we predict the Oscars, I think we can all agree, I'll speak for myself, I can speak for you guys too, it's based around guilds. Guilds and the other award shows are very big indicators of what happens at the Oscars.
Yes.
You have a situation this year, I don't know if this has ever happened before, where SAG went to Black Panther, producers went to Green Book,
right.
Directors went to Roma,
right.
Globes went to drama for Bohemian Rhapsody, Critics' Choice went to Roma. I mean, I guess that's they double up with Roma, but...
Well, Roma couldn't compete for a Globe.
There's no Critics' Choice voters that vote for the Academy.
Yeah.
So I have no idea. We have absolutely no idea what's going to win.
Right. This is truly a wide open category.
So where are you guys going?
I'm going Roma.
I went Roma on the air today.
I am going to say...
No. Don't put it out there, Sean. If you put it out there, it's going to happen. Don't put it out.
Was it like Beetlejuice? You say it, it's going to show up.
I don't even want to believe that people want it to win. I don't even believe that people want it to win. And so I look back over the last, like, Moonlight winning over La La Land being a sort of a brave choice, Shape of Water being a brave choice. It's telling me that the Academy is getting more edgy with their picks. They're being more, taking more gambles, recognizing more greatness. You can't bet against the Mexican directors. They win every time. I'm going with Roma. That trio is it can't be stopped. Can't be stopped.
Did you see the article about like I love when they do those like brutally honest like Oscar voter things? And John Travolta talked about his favorite movie of 2018.
Yeah.
I believe it was called Green Book. Who's Talking? Did you guys? I was reading. I was researching. I was just trying to figure out like what was going on with the voting Academy this year. So I was just curious.
I thought you were going to say Grease Book.
So real quick, we're all going Roma.
Yes.
What's our should win? I'm going Star is Born.
I'm still saying Roma.
That's your should win.
Yeah, that's my should win. Okay. It's a masterpiece.
Did you see it?
Yes.
Yeah, of course we did, because it's amazing. Jake, so by default, your should win is Star is Born,
yeah.
Right?
That's his number one pick, right? It's number
yeah.
one. All right, Gabe. There we go. Those are our picks. Hope
so
everybody enjoyed.
How many of our picks did we actually disagree on?
A couple.
It's going to come down to just a couple of awards.
Yeah, some of the.
It's basically going to come down to The Favorite or Black Panther.
We all agreed on the main six, right? Yeah. The main six we were all
so
in
like they
on.
All cancel each other out.
Kind of. We're
so
either right or wrong.
It's going to come down to like three awards, basically.
Sean, can I ask you one question?
Of course.
This is not. I'm not doing a bit.
Right.
What is the one movie you're afraid to hear called for Best Picture? Is it Green Book?
Yeah, it's Green Book. It is.
Would rather Bohemian Rhapsody over Green Book?
I would. Yes. I would understand.
No question.
Bohemian Rhapsody more, because that film legitimately has become a juggernaut. Like, it's
a beloved movie.
People are really into it, and I don't even hate Green Book. I don't hate it, but we all
like it.
It would
instantly
become one of those movies. To me, like The King's Speech and even The Artist and the years that those movies came out, I liked those movies. They're fine movies. But when I look back over them, I don't want to look back in 5 years and be like, what won? Oh, Green Book? Oh, God. What did it compete against? Holy crap. It competed against Black Panther and Star is Born, and it competed against Roma, and it beat it. Like, that would make me sick.
That's like King's Speech versus Inception versus Social Network. Same thing.
It's setting up to be that.
But I mean, to one thing I find interesting, I'm starting to get a little nervous or an inkling about Black Klansman winning Best Picture.
Really?
I'm starting to feel that vibe.
Man, I don't think Black Klansman's that good of a movie.
Oh, I mean, it has to be a great movie to win Best Picture.
When does that matter?
The artist won Best Picture.
Yeah, the one that would make me most angry, I guess, is The Favorite, because I don't even want The Favorite in that category.
That's a good question. What's the one that make you the most angry?
Yeah,
I love Green Book, but I don't want to see Green Book win Best Picture.
Yeah.
Jake, what's the one that would make you the most angry?
Roma.
Oh, my God. That's funny.
To your point, though, about Green Book versus Bohemian Rhapsody, I honestly, if you put both of them in front of me and said you've got to watch one, I'd say let's watch Bohemian Rhapsody.
Of course you would, because it's entertaining as heck.
So that's fair. So I'll jump with you on that bandwagon.
Okay, that's going to do it for our Oscar picks. If you guys want to follow along with us the night of the show, of course, we're going to be paying attention on social media. So tag us at Real Blend with all of your comments. Play along with us with your picks. Print out your ballots, compete against us. If you're in the same city where we are at when we're settling the burger blend, we will include your order in the thing, and Jake will pay for it. This Week in Movies, really fast.
I'm hoping it's in and out.
Let's just talk Fighting With My Family really fast. I know we've mentioned it on the show before. It's the story of Paige the wrestler and the way that she had an open audition for the WWE. It has Dwayne Johnson in it briefly. It's directed by Stephen Merchant. Jake and I both saw it, and I think it's much better than we expected it to be. It was a really good up-and-coming sports, you know, pull yourself up by the bootstraps sports movie that had some surprises to it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good version of a movie that we've seen 1,000 times before, but I think biggest hold going in, it was that I don't particularly care about wrestling. I don't particularly like wrestling. It's never really done it. I never liked it as a kid. It just wasn't something I got into. But this actually both made me care about wrestling really for the first time, and also gave me a new perspective that yielded a bit of respect from me. You know, to me, I always thought of wrestling as fake, and this sort of reminded me of, like, there's actually a lot of athleticism that goes into this sport, and people can genuinely get really hurt doing it. I walked away with a lot of respect for wrestlers, and I honestly found it to be very funny.
Okay, so I went to the Performance Center, the WWE Performance Center
watched
the people train, and their training is super intense. Like, they're just learning how to slam down on the mat and not hurt themselves, and I can't understand how they're doing it. Like, they're literally throwing their bodies into these wrestling moves, and some of it is, because it is, it's not, I'm not saying it's fake, but there's a performance element to it. There's women who are like, they're grappling on the ground, and they're twisting their arms, and one woman's screaming out in pain, and I'm like, someone help her, right? And then she just quickly turns to her friend, and she's like, taps her or something, and then like they talk real fast, you know. And I'm like, oh my God, that's part of the sell, right? That's part of the bit. So it's fascinating to watch.
I want
to
give our friend Chris Van Vliet a shout out, because he does amazing wrestling interviews on his YouTube channel. It's Chris Van Vliet. The reason I bring that up, though, is because Chris made a point one time that I thought was so awesome, because everyone's like arguing about wrestling being fake. Movies are fake. It's a performance. It is an entertainment performance that you are watching that is choreographed. Yes. And that doesn't take away when you watch a movie. Keanu Reeves isn't really killing people in John Wick. It's a performance.
He's not?
Yeah, and it's fake, so...
I'm not entirely sure, to be honest with you.
I was reading an article the other day. Did you guys hear about Paige, her favorite Steven Soderbergh movie? I don't know if you guys heard about this recently.
I didn't. No, what is it?
Oh, I think it was called Out of Sighting with My Family. I was reading about that recently. I thought it was a really cool choice on her part.
You just got the coldest, most emotionalist rap from Gabe.
So
like,
fast.
Sometimes he laughs, but just got the, like,
I got
I'm
Gabe
done,
twice today. Gabe was laughing at two of them.
All right.
Roma Mamma Mia, he liked. I know he did.
All right, blend game. Very popular blend game on social media this week. The Talented, and I guess it stems from the fact that we have Quiet Place 2 news, Emily Blunt blend. And a lot of people played along on social. We will read audience picks in a minute. I don't have an order in here, which means I should probably ask Gabe if we all have the same choice.
Which we probably do. There's no way we don't.
We all have the same choice?
Why don't we all say it at the exact same time?
Wait, which title are we going with? Like the theatrical
title? We're going
title
with
or the title that's on the DVD? Or
the theatrical title.
All right. 3, 2, 1. Young
Edge
Victoria.
Of Tomorrow.
Oh.
I was like, something's about to happen. I didn't even want to speak. I was like, this is not going to go well.
Normally it would be me. And that's why I transitioned there. So we all went Edge of Tomorrow.
Jake, why did you go with Edge of Tomorrow?
I mean, she created an action character that I think, you know, and unfortunately, women shouldn't have to be in a position where they have to prove themselves to be able to be in an action film. But it has been a genre that has been predominantly dominated by men, essentially since the genre of film has been created. But to me, she not only owns this movie, she is such a badass in this movie. She goes toe-to-toe and arguably is cooler than Tom Cruise in this movie, but it's also a very layered character. It's also a character I wanted to, like, I felt that I got to know, but also someone that I wanted to get to know more of. Someone that we kind of, they builds up this mythology really before we get to know her, and I just really, really loved what she did with the character. And I really, when people talk about an Edge of Tomorrow sequel, which I would love for there to be one, my first thought isn't, ooh, I can't wait for Tom Cruise to come back. My first thought is, ooh, I can't wait for Emily Blunt to come back.
Yeah, one thing I noticed in looking over her filmography, though, she is often like a scene stealer in movies that aren't her movies. Like, I kind of thought about her in Devil Wears Prada, but it's not necessarily her movie. It's Anne Hathaway's and even Meryl Streep's. The Adjustment Bureau, I kind of weighed the Adjustment Bureau.
Love that movie.
It's really great.
Yeah.
And she's really good in it.
I
thought about Looper. But Looper is even still like a Bruce Willis, Joseph Gordon-Levitt movie. Like, but she steals every scene that she's in.
I don't think of her when I think of Looper.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, she has a lot of movies that she's really good in, but they're not necessarily her movies. Edge of Tomorrow, she wrestles that movie away from Cruise. And Cruise is great in it. He's really good, and the gimmick is good, but she's such a badass with layers. Like, she has really great layers. The performance is amazing. I think she's only, what I love about Emily Blunt is that I think she's only growing from here. I think that she, in a year where she can give a hands down commanding horror performance in Quiet Place and then turn around and play Mary Poppins and whatever you idiots think about the movie, she's fantastic as the choice to play
Mary
Poppins.
She's great. She's fantastic. And had she gotten an Oscar nomination for Mary Poppins, I would have been totally fine with that.
Emily Blunt is a 5 out of 5 in that movie.
Yeah,
she's amazing.
Great.
It's not her fault. It's the songs and the storytelling.
I understand.
Nothing to do with her.
I understand your play. So to show that range, it makes me excited about the next 10 years of what I think Emily Blunt is going to be able to do. But Edge of Tomorrow is unbelievably great, and it's my favorite movie that she's in.
It's also a brilliant rewatch, ironically enough. It is a film that is so layered. Also, you have to give credit to actors who have to redo scenes the way they do them in this type of film. The Groundhog Day element to it is so interesting to watch because every scene, while familiar, feels fresh. And as a performance, you still have to play to that. You have to kind of give us what we already think we're getting, but somehow twist it slightly,
right,
but keep it entertaining. The brilliant thing about Edge of Tomorrow, besides the performances, is the editing of that movie, where they pick things back up,
right,
how they redo it. And I have a very unpopular opinion about this. I think I love that title. And I know that people are
It doesn't mean anything.
I disagree with you. Edge of Tomorrow completely sells what the story is. It's the Edge of Tomorrow. I think Live Die Repeat's a great, a fine title. I never understood
that. Pretty good.
I never understood the hatred of Edge of Tomorrow.
I like the original title, which is All You Need Is Kill.
What's wrong with Edge of Tomorrow, though?
It doesn't mean anything.
What do you mean it doesn't mean anything? It means exactly what the movie is.
You're right on the edge of getting to tomorrow, yeah, and then you don't get there.
That's called today.
But it makes
sense. No, it's not. You're on the border between today and tomorrow.
I do want to know, like, I was looking back the other day.
Live, Die, Repeat's better.
I was watching, like, what did I watch that day? It was Night and Day, the Tom Cruise movie. When was the point when Tom Cruise started doing his own, like, the crazy stunts? I was trying to figure out, because that movie didn't look like he did a lot of his own stunts in that one. I don't know for sure if he did or not.
It looked very green screen. That whole movie looked very green screen.
It did. That's why I was a little concerned. But I was wondering.
All
was wondering,
the Mission movies, like, as far back as the first Mission movies, he's been doing them.
Did he do his Emily stunts in Edge of Tomorrow? Yes, I was just curious. Okay,
I believe he did. Yes,
I just wanted to know.
I mean, I don't feel like there were as many stunts for him to do.
Well, he's in that big mecha suit forever.
Yeah, but going back to Emily Blunt, that performance is so good because it's emotionally invested. Not only, like, the best thing about an action character is when they're equally epic as an action star, and then also emotionally, like, there's those sequences. Like, I think they go into that barn, right? And she wants to kill herself, right? To stop or to start over or whatever it was. Because there's something, I can't remember what happens. Like, she runs outside and realizes that he's not been telling her the truth about what they're reliving. Remember that whole moment? I'm trying to remember the emotional, it's been a while since I've seen it. But she is unbelievable in that film. And it's definitely her best movie.
I don't even know if I own it. And that's bothering me.
Ooh, I have the Steelbook.
Do you? You're a big Steelbook guy, though.
I am too.
I have it. Shoot.
It's a really good. I think I have it too.
All right. Anyway, we are not alone in picking.
Guys, look at this one.
Yeah.
Look at the box. Look what it says.
Yeah.
It's both titles. No, but mine's like a slash.
Right. Nice.
Like, it's not a tagline. It's Live, Die, Repeat / Edge of Tomorrow.
That's pretty awesome. Jim Mehta, Kalina, Carrie Allen Case, of course, our own Cap and Ilsa, and TJ Winfield, as well as many, many others, went with Edge of Tomorrow. Michael Kamen's Robert Chivery and CinemaBlend's own Dirk Libby chose Mary Poppins Returns. That's three people who picked Mary Poppins Returns. Someone named Grinch Hands and Arthur Mingo and several others went with The Devil Wears Prada, not Plata. And the consensus in general was that Emily Blunt is amazing in pretty much everything that she does. Except Into the Woods. Into the Woods would not be a right choice. That would be incorrect. I would veto that down. For next week, we will continue to celebrate the artists nominated for Academy Awards this year. May even be talking about somebody who steals an Oscar win when we play # Spike Lee Blend.
Ooh! That's very easy for me.
You think so?
Instant.
Because we're doing favorite, right? We're doing favorite film.
My favorite is also his best.
Okay, interesting. So reach out to us on social media at RealBlend. You can also email us RealBlend@cinemablend.com. That's a place where you can also drop us reviews. We're getting reviews being sent to that email address, and we're reading them at the top of the show.
Sean, did you hear about Spike's favorite Terrence Malick film? I think it's Spike Tree of Life. Did you hear about that one? I thought that was a really good. That was a good article.
I saw that one. It's a good one.
Jay, they're getting worse. For God's sakes, man, do something.
Listeners can follow.
Do you know his favorite?
Oh
Jerry
my
Seinfeld,
God, Gabe.
His favorite Jerry Seinfeld role.
No, what is
his
it?
His favorite Jerry Seinfeld role is Spike Lee movie or B movie. Ah, oh, that's that one up.
It's done. The show's over.
You messed it up so bad. All right, follow us at RealBlend. We're all there playing on social media. Drop us a review on iTunes. It means a ton for us to help us develop the show.
Do you know Spike's favorite movie of his own?
Listening to
Spike Lee Got Game. I get it. Right. Like Lee.
You saved it. We'll be back next week for episode number 58, where we will wrap up the Academy Awards and talk about all of the disappointments from the wins and losses. So thank you very much for listening to episode 57. And as always,
Dunkirk? Ron Burgundy? I'm done.
I am Dunkirk.
Who put a question mark in the prompter?
with the McDonald's app, you can get your favorite thing delivered to your door. So if you were looking for a reason to skip washing those dishes you left in the sink, consider this a sign. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Right now, get $0 delivery fee with any purchase of $15 or more, only in the app. At participating McDonald's, minimum purchase excludes tax and service fees. Delivery prices may be higher than in restaurants. Other fees may apply, not valid with any other offer, discount, or coupon.